This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, our SEC preview in just a little bit. The final of the Power 5 conferences we haven't gotten to this week as we get ready for week one. And in just a moment, I'll let you know who I think has the most pressure on them this Saturday in the Clemson-Georgia game. Get to that coming up in just a moment as well. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. Baker Roofing has been in business for over 100 years. And they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing. And in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager at Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online right there at bakerroofing.com, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. We ended last hour talking about this Bishop Sycamore fiasco. If you ever played or your kids play like an AAU basketball or some sort of travel team, hopefully you never went through this experience, but you may have dealt with a team, a program, an organization, or just a person who did not have their stuff together. Maybe they were a bit of a con or a scam artist, right? And you realize quickly, like, oh yeah, the things they promised, they're not following through. Or we've played for other baseball, travel baseball teams or AAU teams. You know, this is not how things are supposed to operate. And you can realize pretty quickly that either they don't have it together, they overpromise and underdeliver, or they're just scamming you. And so I was sharing some of the details of this Bishop Sycamore team who got onto ESPN TV, national TV Sunday, and have since been exposed as really like this fraudulent, fake, phony school pretending to be an online-only prep school. I don't think the kids take any classes. Former players have told stories about how they all live in a house together, and it's a rundown house in a bad neighborhood. They almost got stabbed one time. Like, there's all sorts of issues around the house. The facilities are crap. They have a website. And one player in particular, or their father, said that their kid was a part of the program last year, and he saw that things weren't coming together. They didn't really have a team that was supposed to play. They didn't finish putting together their schedule. So the father took it upon himself. He said, okay, you know, let's go to some camps, get these kids going to college camps instead so they can, you know, be seen by college coaches. And we'll go, like, as a team. And instead of playing games, you could do that. We could do that as an alternative option. And so Bishop Sycamore, the program, said, sure, right, well, that's what we'll do. We'll take our players. We'll go to these different camps. We'll, you know, we'll cover the expenses and everything. Instead of playing games, we'll go to camp. And so one of the fathers told the story that it was actually going to Clemson. So there must have been a hotel, I guess, in the upstate. The team was staying at this hotel, getting ready to go to the Clemson camp to go try to show off and, you know, be seen by the Clemson. And the father detailed the story about how as they were checking out, right, he told the front desk, you know, that, oh, I'm with Bishop Sycamore. They're going to pay for the hotel room, yada, yada, yada. Okay, no problem. Right? And then later he gets a phone call that day saying that he was going to be charged for the room. He said, what are you talking about? It's supposed to be the Bishop Sycamore account. I'm staying, you know, we're part of that team. They're supposed to be paying for the room. They said, we don't have any information. We have nothing in regards to Bishop Sycamore. Long story short, the guy ends up getting, on his next bill, I guess, from the credit card company, a charge for like thousands of dollars. And he's saying, what's going on from that hotel? And he calls the hotel. They end up charging all the rooms to this poor guy because nobody from Bishop Sycamore put any sort of credit card on file. We're handling it. The hotel had no contact information. So this one father of the kid who's supposed to be part of this team where they're all going to go play and the school was supposed to cover the expenses, right, it turns out that he ended up paying for everyone's hotel room. And that's just one of the anecdotes. Actually, just happened to involve the trip to Clemson. But that's the type of thing you're dealing with this program, where they promise one thing, pull the fastball on you. Coach just got fired. He apparently has had some trouble in the past with certain things. They're using kids that are supposed to be in college. It's a whole mess. And yet, in the end, they got on national TV on ESPN on Sunday. Bishop Sycamore. Probably won't be the last time we hear about that program. Hey, Clemson and Georgia, they play each other Saturday night. Of course, it's the game of the year coming up week one. Who's under the most pressure? Now, when you look at from the team perspective, all offseason, Clemson's under the most pressure. If they lose that game, they don't have an opportunity the rest of the regular season to make up for that loss. But then, over the past couple of weeks, I've started to change my opinion, and I realize that I think Georgia's under more pressure. Because if we're going to work under the premise that both teams could afford a loss, right, that both could be playoff teams even with one loss, the only way you couldn't is if there's four other teams that have one loss or fewer and have, therefore, the better resume to win that tie with you. That would mean that we would have five Power 5 teams this year with one loss or less. I don't know if we'll get to that point. Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and Clemson would all have to have one loss or less. And then you would compare resumes and see, well, you know, Clemson, this is their best win, and oh, Oklahoma, they have a better win than that. And Ohio State, they have a better win. That'd be the only way Clemson would be that fifth team, the odd man out, left out looking in. But that's assuming that every conference champion outside of the Pac-12 wins the conference with one loss or less, and then two teams in the SEC get to that point. Where Georgia and Alabama, if they were both undefeated, would have to play in the SEC title game, so there's at least a loss for one of those two, and then you're talking about another loss. Or we could have the argument about the two-loss Georgia or two-loss Alabama playing in the SEC would be chosen over a one-loss Clemson in the ACC. I don't know. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves in all these scenarios. But the point being, the main takeaway is that if you tell me these teams can afford just what we've put together this year, whereas for Georgia, you lose that game, right? If you get to Alabama, if you get to the SEC title game, maybe you slip up along the way, maybe you lose to Florida. Who knows? Right now you're looking at maybe three losses. Hard to make a case at that point. So I think the pressure from a team perspective on Georgia than Clemson. But what about individually? I gave you three names earlier that I think have the most pressure in all this. Number one, I would say, is Kirby Smart. I think Smart has more pressure than anybody in this game. He's lost his last four games against top five teams. And if he loses this one, you're thinking, once again, oh, here we go. And earlier I detailed how important first impressions are even in college football with week one every season. And so for Georgia, you're starting the year with this game. That's the first thing you see from this team. Whereas if they go out and they run the table in the SEC and they beat a bunch of good teams, you could give maybe a little more of the benefit of the doubt. But already the narrative and the belief is, you know, great program, but can never win that biggest game. Can't beat Alabama. Can't get over that hump. And if you then start the year by playing right into that narrative, I think that's worse than putting together a good year and then meeting that narrative later on or matching that narrative 2 months from now after already building up some cachet. Instead, you jump right into the season with that loss, and you know the conversation come Monday and all week long next week will be, oh, Georgia, right, good team, but you know, not good enough, not a national championship team, can't beat the top team, JT Daniels overrated, Kirby Smart can't win the big game, yada, yada, yada. And when it happens week one, it can really influence the rest of your season. When you get off on that bad foot, on the wrong foot, right? That could influence how the rest of the year goes. I provided examples earlier of a lot of teams that lost week one and maybe didn't quite recover the rest of the year. Whereas for Clemson, as I just laid out, I don't think they lose again after potentially this week. For Georgia, they would be starting with a loss before getting into the SEC schedule. They can't afford that loss as much as Clemson can. So I think the pressure is on Kirby Smart as head coach of that program. He also has a lot more to prove than Dabo. You know, Dabo has proven how good of a coach he is. Kirby has shown he's a great recruiter. Is he a good enough coach to elevate this talented roster to actually go win a national championship? We haven't seen it yet. Now, there's similar teams on paper. When I look at these two teams, I mean, they're both top five, maybe top three programs this year. They're both breaking in essentially new quarterbacks. They will both have top defenses in the country. They're both led by great defensive lines. That will be the strength of their defense. Additionally, Georgia has the better ground game, but I think Clemson has the better wide receiving core. So offensively, they both have a strength that maybe the other doesn't. There are questions about both offensive lines. The focus is going to be on Clemson's offensive line blocking Georgia's defensive line. But Georgia is replacing a few guys on the offensive line as well, and they don't have a ton of experience on that O-line. So I think there are some questions in the trenches on both sides of this matchup. Therefore, I think the largest gap is probably between the coaching staffs, because I think on paper they're very evenly matched. That's why it's only a 3-point spread. It's why they're both, you know, top five teams in the country. There's not a huge difference between these two. But I think Clemson has the real advantage in coaching. I think these teams are so close on paper that the biggest mismatch is between the two coaching staffs. Clemson has always found a way to overachieve, and Georgia has found a way to underachieve, and I think those two things fall on coaching. I think the most pressure in this matchup is on Kirby Smart. Beat a top five team. Number two on that list of most pressure, I would say JT Daniels. While both quarterbacks have a lot to prove and a lot of pressure on them, they're stepping in, having to be the guy to lead these programs to the promised land this year. But the reason why I put JT Daniels above JT over DJ, is because I think DJ has more believers. I think he's given the benefit of the doubt a little bit more than JT Daniels. DJ went to Notre Dame last year in a big game and played really well. JT Daniels looked pretty good at the end of last season, but did so while facing three SEC teams, none of which had a winning record. And of those three teams, one had the 11th worst defense in the country last year, another had the 23rd worst defense. And when it went up against the best defense he faced last year, he struggled. That was his worst of the four performances. Now, we played the audio in the first hour from Anthony Tresh from Pro Football Focus when he was on the show last month, but he laid out his concerns for JT Daniels. And much like many people view Georgia, Anthony said, and he kind of has to see it to believe it. He thought last year was maybe a little flukish from what we've seen from JT Daniels when he was at USC and the expectations and how he played in the last couple of games of last season. Tresh was not buying into some of the hype around JT Daniels. Now, I am a big JT Daniels fan. I think he has a really good year, but I also think he has more to prove. I think there are more doubters of JT Daniels than DJ heading into the season. And so, not to mention the fact also that we're looking at JT as almost like the savior, right? Georgia fans are probably hoping that he will be the guy. That's been the talk around Georgia. We finally have the quarterback to win a national championship. That's the pressure being put on JT Daniels. The pressure in that sense isn't as large on DJ because, well, Clemson has won a couple of national championships in the last 5 years. Georgia's been waiting over 40 years for somebody like this to come along. They thought they had it in Jake Fromm. And then even more frustrating when you see Justin Fields go and play well elsewhere. And he couldn't figure out the quarterback position last year. And now JT Daniels is getting some Heisman hype, and you think, oh, here's our guy. He's going to be the one to deliver us a national championship. I think there's more pressure in that sense on JT. I think there's more for him to prove. And then thirdly, in terms of most pressure in this specific matchup on Saturday, I go Brent Venables, defensive coordinator of Clemson. Because while they're evenly matched with Georgia when it comes to the defenses, I give the benefit of the doubt more to Georgia than Clemson. They're two of the best defenses in the country, both led by really strong defensive lines. But the last time we've seen Clemson in games like this, the last few times, they surrendered 49 points to Ohio State, 47 to Notre Dame, 42 to LSU, all away from home. This game will also be away from home against a top program and offense like those others. And Clemson defensively is mostly back this year. It's obviously more experience now. You got guys coming back. You got a sixth-year leader in the middle of that defense. The defensive line is even a year older. It was very young, green last year, right? Relying on some freshmen. They'll be better this year. But Clemson won't be tested in the ACC, so this is their chance, prior to at least the conference championship game, to prove how good this defense is and how it can match up against those top offenses. Whatever we see Saturday will probably be the lasting impression the rest of the year. And if they do theoretically struggle defensively against Georgia on Saturday, even if they play well in the ACC schedule, you'll still look back at that Georgia game, right? And say, oh, yeah, big whoop. I mean, the defense clobbered Syracuse, but remember what happened when they went up against JT Daniels in Georgia? So this is a big game for Clemson's defense. Not only that, not only because of the rhetoric, but also because of the way to try to win this game, potentially. Vegas has the point total at only 51. Look at some of the other games this weekend. You got some high point totals. Usually when you get two top programs like that, you expect there to be offensive fireworks because it's so hard these days for defenses to slow down top offenses. But Vegas has that point total at only 51, and yet the point spread's about 3. So just based off of those metrics, you're looking at a 27-24 game for Clemson, the two teams scoring in the 20s. Right? We're not looking at a blowout with a 51-point total. It's not like it's going to be 40-10. It's going to be supposed to be a close game, and therefore low scoring, staying below or around 51. So you're looking at something like a 27-24, 28-24 type of game, which may not be how many believe this will be played out. Some may be expecting more fireworks. But Vegas views it as a defensive battle, which I think not only puts more pressure on JT Daniels, who's number two on my list, but also puts more pressure on that Clemson defense. Can you hold up your end of the bargain? Because the expectation is that this is going to be a bit of a defensive struggle. Is your defense up to snuff to handle that? Those are the three people that I think have the most pressure on them come Saturday. Kirby Smart is number one, needs to win a game like this. JT Daniels is number two because he has to prove that he is as good as some believe. And then Brent Venables is number three because that Clemson defense needs to show that it's as good as it once was not too long ago, and that the outliers were those last three games against those big programs, especially in the playoff. We played the audio earlier from Trevor Maddich, who said that this Clemson defense may be the best since Dabo Swinney has arrived. Could be the best in the country. Well, now it needs to live up to those expectations starting Saturday against Georgia. Other audio to get to in regards to Clemson. We were talking about DJ and the comparison to JT Daniels, how they're both kind of being broken in on Saturday, but I do think Daniels has more pressure on him. I think he has more to prove. Here was DJ speaking with the media about just having this opportunity, what it means to go be the starting quarterback for Clemson and begin this year week one against Georgia.
It means everything to me, you know. This is what I've always wanted to do coming into college. I want to be able to play games on a huge stage like this, and coming from high school playing on a big stage, that I didn't want to go to a drop-off and be able to not play in these big games like I did in high school. So being a kid coming from the Inland Empire, playing at Bosco, be able to play on college game day versus Georgia is a huge accomplishment. I'm super happy to be able to be in this situation.
Yeah, first two road games for him as a starter, at Notre Dame on a Saturday night and in Charlotte against Georgia on a Saturday night. You can't get much bigger than that. And then here is his offensive coordinator, Tony Elliott, talking to the media, where Tony was talking about that running back position and maybe where DJ could even get some help in that backfield this year.
You know, Shipley, as we all know, is an exceptional young man, very mature for his age. And you saw that throughout the course of camp, that even with when you threw him in there with the ones, he wasn't overwhelmed. And he, when you give him the ball, he's going to know what to do. You know, he's like Travis as a freshman. You gave Travis the ball as a freshman, he's going to know what to do. But what, you know, impressed me is just his understanding of defensive structure and anticipation and blitz pickup. So I have no doubt that when the lights come on, it's not going to be too bright for Will Shipley.
That was Tony Elliott talking about the freshman running back. I think as we head into Saturday's game, Georgia is much better off at the running back position. But I think Clemson's running back position will improve as the year goes on, as Shipley, the freshman, starts to play a larger role and have a bigger impact. In most areas, I do think these teams are evenly matched. I think Georgia has the advantage with the running backs. I think Clemson does have the advantage with the wide receivers. Many believe Georgia has the advantage in the trenches, but I'm not so sure. That is a concern. Dabo acknowledged it. Their defensive line against our offensive line, but I think also on the flip side as well, because Clemson's defensive line should be really tough, and Georgia's offensive line is still somewhat new. Some new pieces, some young pieces on that roster in terms of starts from the offensive line. I think it's a bit of a concern from both sides. I think these teams are very evenly matched. It's why I think the coaching may be the biggest mismatch. Therefore, Kirby Smart has the most pressure Saturday in my eyes. Coming up, we will get to our SEC preview and breakdown, the final of the Power 5 conferences leading into week one of the season. We'll do that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the final of our Power 5 conference breakdown. The SEC, I'll let you know how things will shake out there. My official Gamecock prediction coming up in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. From power ballads to Power 5 conference breakdowns. We've gone through all the conferences this week, and we have the SEC remaining, which we'll get to in just a moment. Speaking of the Gamecocks, last hour I was talking about the audio from Shane Beamer's press conference yesterday where he said, we're not going to worry about all the uniform changes this year and being unique and wear these different crazy uniform combos. We want to focus on winning games. And I love that message. And I shared the story of when I was in minor league baseball, of the minor league baseball player who was more concerned about the music being played at the stadium than the actual work he was supposed to be getting in to get ready for said game or just even his career, trying to make it to the big leagues. He was more concerned about the music than the dream. Somebody on the text line had asked, do Skechers brand have sponsorships with any sports or teams? Yeah, I think they sponsor the local Canasta League in at the Y. Skechers. No, Skechers, I don't think, I hope not. They don't have any sponsorship. That's the old man shoe, right? I think Skechers, actually, I think they're the sponsor of my father's bocce ball league. I think that's what's going on. They all wear Skechers as they play bocce over there, the old man's league.
Maybe they should actually get some retired athletes. That's actually true.
There you go. That would be the play.
That might actually be a good move on their part.
Yeah. Get Frank Thomas and some Skechers and throw him on TV. That'd be good. Bo Jackson. Get some of these former players that are oldies now and get them to walk around as Skechers. You know what Skechers may actually sponsor? Ben Stiller movies. Because I feel like in every Ben Stiller, he always plays that goofy, like, unhip kind of guy who doesn't have great style. I think of Along Came Polly. I think he wore Skechers in that movie. Even, like, Meet the Parents. He never is, like, this cool, hip, well-dressed guy. He's always got, like, the dad jeans on with the Skechers sneakers and wearing, like, the overcoat.
Well, Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers, he was playing a nurse. So I could see, you know, somebody in that profession having to wear something like that. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I've ever worn Skechers. I'm sure they're comfortable. They're just not very stylish. Imagine pitching a kid, hey, you can come to our school. You can wear Skechers. Oh, great. I don't think they even make, like, athletic wear. Like, do they make basketball shoes? I don't think so. For kids, for your third and fourth grade rec team, I don't know if I've ever seen, like, a high school student or certainly a college student wearing Skechers basketball shoes.
I think they do make cross trainers.
Oh, okay. Skechers. You know, they got their nice slip-ons, though. You want a nice slip-on shoe? You go get yourself a Skecher. You want a nice white Skecher with some crisp Velcro on there to wear to your Canasta Club? There you go. Skechers, that's the brand for you. The old man shoe. All right, we've been going through the Power 5 conferences all week, leaving the best for last, the SEC. And we've been using the SEC theme song, so now it's actually warranted to use said song as I give you my official predictions for the SEC this season. It just seems right. You're getting ready for a big Saturday, a big SEC game. This song's blasting through the speakers. You got the chicken wings in the oven. All right, let's start with the West. Obvious. I'm going Alabama to win the West. They're still the most talented team in the conference. Yes, they have the new quarterback that they have to break in. They're going to have to find their running back. They're going to have, you know, new offensive linemen. They're going to be a little raw to begin on offense. But they have a great defense, especially that front seven. Maybe the best front seven in football. They'll have good special teams once again. Obviously the best head coach we've ever seen. And so Alabama could be a little vulnerable early on as they figure some things out. As the new quarterback gets a little comfortable. They'll have three new offensive linemen, new quarterback, eight new starters on offense this year. Have to replace your running back, your top two receivers, this and that. But we see Alabama do it every year. So I'm not concerned about them replacing the talent. My only concern would be maybe a little bit of a slower start. And then by week three, then at that point, maybe they're humming along. New offensive coordinator, of course, with Bill O'Brien. They'll still be fine. I think they blow out Miami this weekend. But there could be a few struggles, just a few hiccups along the way. But the West will come down to October 9th. Alabama at Texas A&M. I think the winner wins the division. I think Alabama wins the game. That's why I put them number one. I put Texas A&M number two. Texas A&M's kind of in the same boat as Alabama. Just maybe a step below when it comes to the talent and even the coach. Texas A&M, for lack of a better term, may be a bit of a poor man's Alabama in that they have a new quarterback, new young quarterback we haven't seen. They'll have four new offensive linemen. They're breaking in some new talent offensively, but the defense, I think, for Texas A&M will actually be the best in the SEC. Outside of quarterback and offensive line, they have all the other pieces. not only the defense, but they have one of the best running backs in the conference. They do have a good group of wide receivers. They have a head coach he's no Nick Saban, but he has won a national championship before. And most importantly, for that October 9th game that will decide this division, A&M gets to get Alabama at home. We'll see how much that helps. I think Alabama wins the game. I think it'll be a good game. I don't think it'll be a blowout like the last couple of years. But Alabama wins the game, therefore wins the West. So I go Alabama and Texas A&M, the top two teams in the division. I then put Ole Miss number three. I am on the Lane train. Lane Kiffin knows offense. Matt Corral will perform like one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And last year, first year for Lane Kiffin as head coach, during a pandemic, nobody had a harder job than first-year head coaches last year. And for Lane, during a pandemic, first year on the job, in the toughest conference, they were 500. They beat a top 10 team in a bowl game. They were tied with Alabama in the fourth quarter. Now, the issue for them is if they can play any sort of defense whatsoever. They were one of the worst defenses in the country last year. But now, year two of the defensive coordinator and the system, nine returning starters who are a little more experienced, six of their defensive starters are upperclassmen this year. And my other concern for Ole Miss is that I think they'll be a good program. I am also concerned if they have a ceiling to them. That's why I put them third. I think that's maybe their ceiling in the West. Not only this year, but potentially moving forward. Because while they may surprise in Alabama, I don't know if they can match that level week in and week out. They have one trick, and it's a great trick. And within that one trick, they can get real creative. Lane Kiffin is a great offensive coach. But their defense is one of the worst in the country. They're not going to beat you with their ground attack. It's just through the air. They have one way to beat you. And we saw last year, when things don't go right, Matt Corral's throwing six interceptions. Right? He's turning the football over at times. That's what happens when you put the ball in the air, when you want to throw it 60 times and you're going to take some shots downfield. High risk, high reward. Sometimes there's going to be that high risk that comes into play more than the reward. That would be my concern with Ole Miss. They'll beat some good teams. They'll win the majority of their games. But I don't know if this operation could ever get to the point where you are in Alabama, no slip-ups, you beat the teams every week, you never have an off game, because I think it's just a risky idea to win strictly by just throwing it all over the yard. Number four, I go with LSU. Last year was such a challenge. You lost so much talent coming off a national championship, and you had to try to do it during a pandemic-based season. They lose their quarterback. They have to turn to the freshman, Max Johnson, who didn't play. He actually didn't play that bad. This year, Max Johnson has a little more experience. You got 18 starters back, new coaches, and it's a wake-up call for Ed O. Maybe even a little pressure on him. You get comfortable after you win a national championship. Doug Peterson wrote a book and went on a book tour the offseason after he won a Super Bowl. He was then out of a job 2 years later. Don't rest on your laurels. But we're all guilty of that. You hit your sales goal a couple of days early. Yeah, maybe you kick your feet up to end that month. Like, I already exceeded my sales goal. New month starts in 2 days. Let me save all my new sales for next month. We can be guilty of that. You have a hard day at work. You go home. All you want to do is just kick your feet up and have a drink. You win the national championship, and maybe you don't work just quite as hard. Then you get a wake-up call like last year. I think LSU will be better. They have an interesting test this week against UCLA, but they'll be favored in 10 of 12 games this year, LSU. And the two games that they'll be underdogs in are the two best teams in the division that will finish ahead of them, Alabama and Texas A&M. I'm putting Auburn in fifth place in the West. They bring in Brian Harsin as the head coach, Mike Bobo, Derek Mason as the coordinators. On paper, this is a good coaching staff. I think Auburn can be improved in year one of Brian Harsin because you already have Tank Bigsby in the backfield, maybe the best running back in the SEC. Yes, maybe better than Kevin Harris. But I also think Harsin and Mike Bobo will help Bo Nix. I've never been the biggest Bo Nix fan, but I think this offense is better for him. They're more of quarterback guys. They're more of a pro-style offense instead of what Gus Malzahn was running. And they're going to get Bo Nix more under center than in the shotgun, which helps when you're under center. When you're in the shotgun, what are you doing as they snap the football to you? You're looking down at the football. And even if it's just a split second to take your eyes off the defense, when you're under center, football goes right into your hands. You're looking at the defense as you backpedal to your drop. Not only that, look, I never played quarterback beyond middle school. But I always, the quarterback, whenever we have the Thanksgiving game and everything, I always preferred the movement of coming back from under center, hitting the top of your drop, and then stepping up and delivering instead of being in a standstill shotgun position and throwing at times almost flat-footed. I think this coaching staff will help Bo Nix. And remember how the first year went for Gus Malzahn at Auburn. We'll see if Brian Harsin has a similar effect. And then rounding out the West, I put Arkansas ahead of Mississippi State. I put Arkansas at number six. Sam Pittman pulled off one of the best coaching jobs in the country last year. First time head coach during a pandemic with the toughest schedule in the country. They won three games, should have had at least a fourth. Now, once again, they have the toughest schedule in the country this year, only two conference games at home, and they no longer have a veteran quarterback like Felipe Franks. But otherwise, they do return 19 starters and a good coaching staff led by Barry Odom, their defensive coordinator. I put them ahead of Mississippi State because I don't think Mike Leach is ready to compete yet at Mississippi State. He's turning over this offense. It's going to take time. They lost 20 players in the transfer portal. And Leach, to me, is not as talented as Lane Kiffin. He's trying to do the same thing as Lane, but with less talent on the roster and less talent in himself, especially at quarterback. I think Ole Miss is the much better quarterback. Last year, Mississippi State averaged 19 points a game. They're a team that's supposed to win on their offense. The defense was better than you would believe. The offense was a disaster. I don't think it gets much better in year two. I put Mississippi State in last. Let's not forget, Mike Leach has never won a division, right? And that was coaching elsewhere outside of the SEC. In the East, I put Georgia number one. I think we are headed to a Bama-Georgia SEC title game. This Georgia team is stacked. I'm not sure what their weakness truly is, other than maybe JT Daniels underperforms or Kirby Smart costs them a big game. But for SEC standards, they have a pretty easy schedule. And according to 24/7 Sports and their rankings, Georgia has the second most talent of any team in the country, only behind Alabama. According to those rankings, based off of recruiting rankings, Alabama and Georgia are the two most talented teams in the country this year. The East could come down to that game in October between Georgia and Florida. I put Florida second. A lot of Florida doubters. They lost more starters than any other team in the conference, even more than Alabama. And they have a tough schedule this year. Only three home games in the SEC. They obviously have to play Georgia, and they also draw Alabama and LSU from the West. But I trust Dan Mullen. He's one of the best offensive minds in the country. Look what he did last year. He took Kyle Trask, who nobody had heard of. He didn't start for 7 years, and he turned him into a second-round pick. He took Kyle Pitts, turned him into the first tight end drafted in the top five in 50 years. He took Tony, who was like a no-star recruit coming out of high school, turned him into a first-round wide receiver after changing positions. I trust Dan Mullen. Look at what he did for Dak Prescott. Look at what he did at Mississippi State. I think they will replenish. I think they will be just fine. I think they will score enough points. I think Emory Jones has a good year. And according to those 24/7 Sports rankings, Florida has the seventh most talented team in the country, even ahead of Texas A&M. They lost the most starters, but the cupboard is not bare. I think Dan Mullen will be fine at Florida this year. Number three, I put Kentucky. I think they'll be much improved this year. They'll always have a good defense with Stoops, but they brought in a new offensive coordinator from the NFL. Last year, they had the sixth worst passing attack in the country, and their offensive coordinator last year is out of football. He did not get another job this offseason. So may tell you what you need to know about the guy in charge of the offense last year. They did lose their quarterback, and they do have the ninth, or I should say they did have the ninth toughest schedule last year. It's only the 84th toughest this year. So I think Kentucky, from the coaching change and the schedule, will improve this year. In fourth place, I put Missouri. They're another team that I think will be improved. Eli Drinkwitz did a great job last year. First year on the job, pandemic, SEC. He had only three spring practices. They went 500 in the SEC with a freshman quarterback while having to add Alabama and LSU last minute to the schedule because of the pandemic. I thought he did a tremendous job. Their quarterback may be the most underrated in the SEC. He had only seven touchdown passes last year, but he was a freshman. I think they take the training wheels off a little bit this year. I think he has a big year as a sophomore. What's the best thing about freshmen? They become sophomores. And Missouri returns 24 of 31 players who played meaningful snaps a year ago. The schedule's easier this year than last year. My biggest concern, really, with Missouri, I don't like the defensive coordinator hire. They brought in Steve Wilks. Wilks didn't work in the NFL. He hasn't coached in college, at least in a long time. I don't know if he's going to work in the SEC as the defensive coordinator. Did not like that move. In fifth place, this is where we find the Gamecocks. The only real promising thing about South Carolina this year on paper is the run game. They should have a great rushing attack. That's going to help Luke Doty. And then you could be optimistic about Shane Beamer and seeing what he accomplishes in year one, but again, let's be realistic. It won't be a ton. The Gamecocks could also be good in the trenches. Those will be the two highlights. The rushing attack, maybe their line play on both sides of the football. But the most important thing this year, let's just see how Shane Beamer looks. Let's see which direction this program's heading in. How much can they improve in year one of Beamer? My official prediction for the Gamecocks, I'm going 5-7. They're going to be an underdog in 8 of their 12 games. They should win the 4 games in which they're favored, which are their 3 non-conference games, Eastern Illinois, East Carolina, and Troy. They'll lose against Clemson. And they should beat Vanderbilt in the SEC. They'll be favored in that game. There's 4 wins. Then I give them losses elsewhere on the schedule with A&M and Georgia and Clemson and even Florida. And as I've been saying all offseason, the Gamecocks schedule will come down to those 4 toss-up games. Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, and Auburn. Best case scenario, maybe you win 3 out of 4 and you get to 7 wins. More realistic, maybe splitting and get to 6 wins. But I'm going to say they win only one of those 4 games. I can't give them the benefit of the doubt after these last couple of years. I think they win one of those 4 toss-ups, win 2 conference games this year, and finish 5-7 overall, finishing in 5th place. In 6th, I put Tennessee. New coach, drama around the program. They had more players transfer than any other SEC team this offseason. They're the least experienced team in the SEC this year. They weren't great last year, and on top of that, they lost their quarterback, top running back, top wide receiver, top tackler. So they're even worse now than they were when they were 3-7 last year. And lastly, we finish up with Vanderbilt, who is far worse than the rest of the conference once again. They're clearly the worst team in the SEC once again. They have lost 13 straight SEC games, the longest losing streak in 18 years, and 10 of those 13 losses have been by double digits. They'll finish in last place once more. That's how the SEC will play out this year. Bama and Georgia will be in the SEC title game, and the West will come down to Alabama and Texas A&M on October 9th. The East will come down to Georgia and Florida in Jacksonville in October. And the Gamecocks, I have it 5-7 this year, finishing in 5th place in the East. Coming up, the latest on the whole Deshaun Watson situation. We'll get to that next. It's the Maurer Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Maurer Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I would have given you all of my heart, but there's someone who's torn it apart, and she's taken just all that I had. But if you want, I'll
coming up,
try to love again.
Just a thought on the latest of the Deshaun Watson situation here in the Maurer Midday Show with Luke Maurer on ESPN Radio.
But I know.
I think I would rank this 3rd of the versions. I think Cat Stevens, I think that may be the best version. I do prefer that over Rod Stewart's. And then Sheryl Crow. That may be the best version. Those are 2 really good versions. I got nothing against Rod Stewart, but this may be the, at tops, 3rd best. I have a great song, by the way. I love the song. First cut is the deepest. You could apply that, I guess, to Georgia or Clemson this weekend. Now, one of those teams is going to suffer their first loss, and it could be a big one. For Georgia, the rhetoric will be, right, can't beat a top team. For Clemson, it's going to be, well, you know, they'll run through the ACC, but they lost to the only good team they faced, depending on what happens on Saturday. Quickly, because we're short on time, Deshaun Watson. The latest report from Aaron Wilson, who's close to the Texans organization, used to cover them for the paper there in Houston, said that the Texans are prepared to keep Deshaun Watson on the 53-man roster this year and just make him inactive every week. They don't want to give in to the trade request, or they haven't figured out a proper trade. I don't know how you could trade for him. Therefore, Deshaun Watson will get his money this year. He'll be paid $10.5 million. He'll still remain on the active roster. Won't have to worry about playing. He'll be inactive, so he won't even have to probably travel. I don't think they'd want him to. He probably won't even be at the stadium or be on the sidelines. And I'll continue to say, I don't get how this is the best course of action. I'm holding out hope. I assume, my assumption is that by the time the season begins a week from tomorrow, Roger Goodell will finally step up and put him on the commissioner's exempt list. And I don't know if you have to wait till the season actually begins to do such a thing, but you could at least acknowledge that that's the plan in advance. This has been so odd to me, where the NFL usually is so swift and harsh in their judgment, right? Where Ben Roethlisberger gets suspended for multiple games because of a situation that involved one woman in a bathroom. Deshaun Watson's involved with 24 women. Or Ezekiel Elliott gets suspended because of a situation that involved, you know, a former girlfriend. Deshaun Watson, again, 24 people that are strangers. And you don't want to compare any and say, well, this is a worse situation. They're all bad situations. But the NFL was so quick in their reaction and harsh even in their punishment. And yet with this Deshaun situation, I don't get why this has lingered on all summer long to the point where the Texans have nothing to do other than keep him on the roster, use up an active roster spot on a guy who's not going to play all year, and Deshaun will get exactly what he wants, sitting at home getting paid to not play for the Texans. All while we wait to see, is he actually guilty or is he innocent? I do not understand this, and I'm still waiting for some sort of leader to step up in all this. And in the end, the Texans are the ones that are really getting screwed because now they have to hold the roster spot and still pay Deshaun Watson and all of this. Right? Imagine if you put your company in that situation. I don't know if they would be so kind, even if you were innocent. But if you bring that publicity to your company, or just by putting yourself in that position where you may not have done anything illegal, but they have acknowledged the many massage therapists and the sexual relations they've had, they've just denied the fact that it wasn't consensual in certain things happen. And if you had a public position and that type of story got out there, right, I don't think your company would like just the idea of you being in that position while working for the company. I'm still waiting for somebody to step up, but this is the latest, that this is the plan. There's nothing else the Texans can really do. They got to keep him on the active roster. They're going to pay him all year, and he's not going to play. I think that's crazy. I'm waiting for them to place him on the commissioner's exempt list to do something. And the time is ticking. The season begins a week from tomorrow. We'll wrap up your Wednesday. When we come back, it's the Tomorrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Tomorrow Midday Show.
What a funky finish here Wednesday afternoon here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I grew up with a kid called Mike Sisko, so we did have a Sisko kid who used to be a friend of mine. So we used to call him Sisko Kid. Love War as we wrap up your Wednesday afternoon. If you ever miss anything from the show, that of course that's the band. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Also available on our website and through our free app, which always allows me the opportunity to remind you that you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, and through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from 10 different states and multiple countries here on this Wednesday afternoon. We were talking earlier about Skechers. Our buddy Peter over at the Charleston Battery said that Joe Montana has endorsed Skechers, doing TV commercials for their shape-up shoes. So there you go. They stole our idea and already used it. Get an old athlete to endorse Skechers. Montana, I guess, has been their guy. Now that you mention it, I do remember those commercials. Which is funny. You know, Montana seems like the right guy, too. Because even though he was nicknamed Joe Cool, that was more for being, like, cool in the situation, cool on the field. He comes off now as he dresses like, you know, like your father. He's got the Skechers out and the dad jeans and, like, the untucked shirt. But when he was on the field, you always hear that story about in the Super Bowl, in the huddle of the Super Bowl. I think it was, like, in the fourth quarter, close game, right? Like, two-minute drill. And he says, hey, look, there's John Candy. Right, where he was in the biggest moment like that. He was still, like, being distracted by the people in the stands. And it wasn't that he was distracted. It was just that he was so calm and cool. He'd go out there and throw a touchdown pass while noticing John Candy in the huddle first. He seems like a good guy to endorse Skechers, though. So you got Joe Montana and probably like somebody like Bobby Fischer. Joe Montana sponsors Uggs. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon for a one-hour show leading up to the Citadel in Coastal Carolina. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.